The game is on the line, and I've only got a shot clock's worth of time to tell you about Subway's $6.99 footlong deal. That's right. Order now in the Subway app and get any footlong on the menu for just $6.99. Fresh sliced deli meat, fresh crispy veggies. Ah, too much good stuff. Get it now on the Subway app. Any footlong for just $6.99. Use code 699FL now. Only here for a limited time. Redeemable at participating U.S. restaurants. Subway app, online orders only. Add-ons, additional plus tax. Additional fees apply on delivery. Excludes footlong snacks. Limited time.
Shortly after my last update, the faceless man and I set out for the home of the people who had once been our parents. He ushered me out the door, shoving me ahead, as we walked through the woods into the direction of the dark forest road. Phoenix had taken a rifle that had probably once belonged to the old man who took him in with him, but he hid it, and himself, in a bush once we had reached the roadside, in order to avoid coming off as even more suspicious. Instead of standing up in the middle of the road, like he had last time, though, he grabbed me by the shoulders and guided me out onto the street before pressing me down. I understood. I didn't like the idea of playing dead at all, but I knew that if I angered him any more than I already had, there would probably be no need to pretend at all in no time. I laid down, the rough pavement scraping my palms and knees. I turned to face away from the driving direction, my cheek resting on the strangely warm, hard ground. Maybe it would have hurt, but I still couldn't quite feel anything on or around my face, at least not in the way that I used to. And so we waited. I couldn't see Phoenix, where he was hiding behind me. I couldn't see the car coming either, but I could hear it. More so, I could feel it through the road, or at least I thought I could. My heart was hammering in my chest, thoughts of all the ways this plan could go wrong running through my head. What if who was ever in the car wouldn't see me? What if they'd run me over? I stifled a breath of relief when the car stopped a few feet ahead of me. I could hear the doors being thrown open and hurried footsteps approaching. I felt a sudden twinge in my heart upon realizing what was going to happen. Phoenix hadn't just taken the rifle for Dana and Michael. In his state, who knew what he'd do to these people? I could only hope they had to be alive for us to use their faces. Still, the thought of them falling for our trap somehow had me even more disturbed than the last time. I prayed that there would just be two of them. Maybe then he wouldn't hurt them too much. "Oh my God, is she dead?" the high-pitched voice of a young woman called out. "Hold on, stay back," a male voice responded, this one much closer to me. And there it was, a third voice. My blood ran cold. "Dude, get back here. Call an ambulance or something. Don't touch her." The man near me simply gave a disapproving grunt before bending down beside me. I could feel his hand on my shoulder. "Miss?" he asked softly, his fingers wrapped around my upper arm. "Please don't turn me around," I remember thinking. I wish he'd listened to his friend. I didn't bother keeping my eyes shut as he rolled me onto my back. For a split second, we gazed right into each other's eyes, his growing wide and shocked. "Damn it," he gasped, falling on his behind. I wanted to warn him, shout, scream, but my rigid lips only parted enough to press out a single word. I'm not sure he understood. It came out just as slow and distorted and mangled as Phoenix's threat prior to all this. "Run." The man staggered to his feet. He looked terrified. At the very same moment, I heard another car door slam. My head jerked around and I found a woman walk up to us, from presumably the passenger side. I cursed inwardly. "What the hell's going—" She fell silent upon spotting me. "Run," I repeated, louder this time. "Get away." I added, but it was pointless. Either they couldn't understand me, or they weren't paying attention. It was too late anyways. Phoenix had come up behind them, rifle in hand. The panicked screeching from the man in the back seat pierced the air as the faceless man grabbed the stranger by the neck and slammed his head against the hood of the car. The woman stood frozen in place, her mouth hanging open and her eyes wide. I got up as quickly as I could and rushed towards her, shoving her towards the car, all the while repeating my futile gurgles trying to tell her to flee. Phoenix was faster, and I watched in horror as he punched her square across the face and shoved her to the ground with such force that she lost consciousness and stayed down. Suddenly, I could hear the engine of the stranger's car sputter. Blinking against its headlights, I spotted who must have been the third man of the group in the driver's seat. He probably climbed over there from his spot in the back seat. He appeared to have trouble getting the vehicle moving, but what was worse was that he hadn't thought of locking the doors. Phoenix had reached him within seconds, and I watched in horror as he tore the door open, grabbed the young man, and dragged him outside. He was kicking and screaming, struggling in the faceless man's grip. Realizing my chance, I lunged forward, grabbed Phoenix's arm, and tried to get the rifle away from him. He growled as he batted at me, attempting to shake me off, but I had latched onto his side with all my might. My fingers locked around the large weapon. I finally managed to pry it from his fist. At the very same moment, the stranger broke free from his clutch and took off running into the opposite direction. I tried to scream at him to get back inside the car, but the second I opened my mouth, Phoenix struck me. He'd hit me before, but this blow was the hardest yet. I crumbled down onto the rough pavement, dropping the rifle, and Phoenix snatched it up before I could react. I reached out for his feet, hoping to make him stumble, fall, or just to temporarily distract him, anything to keep him from getting the chance to shoot. But he was fast. Again, too fast. I squeezed my eyes shut when I heard the noise. The gunshot was loud and piercing. I prayed he'd missed, but the low sound of a body hitting the ground confirmed my worst fears. Phoenix immediately ran up to him, bent down to check his pulse, and after dropping his wrist again, heaved him up from the ground to throw him into a ditch by the roadside. He then ripped out bits from a bush, as well as twigs from the trees, and used them to cover the body. When he returned, he gestured for me to get to work on the woman's face. She wasn't much older than me, and just a bit more tan, so once I had absorbed her features, they didn't look too much out of place. I grimaced, raised my brows, and stretched my lips a few times as I watched the faceless man do the same after feeling up the driver's face. He loaded them into the car's trunk before motioning for me to get in. I moved to climb into the passenger seat, only for him to shake his head. "Back seat," he ordered. "You think I'm stupid or something? Not letting you sit where you can reach the steering wheel." I'll skip out on the details of the car ride. There was hardly a single word spoken during the time we spent driving back to our parents' house. The closer we got, the more anxious I became. And by the time we reached my former home, I had goosebumps and my hair stood on end. "How are we going to get in?" I asked breathlessly. Phoenix just shrugged. He ushered me ahead before him, pushing me closer to the front door. It was nighttime, and knowing Dana and Michael, they were probably already asleep by then. I figured if we kept quiet, we could have a chance at going unnoticed. We would probably either have to destroy the lock somehow or break in through a window, which would probably draw attention. It was then that I noticed that the door was actually open a crack. I frowned, tentatively reaching out and pushing against it with just one finger. It swung open with a creak. I looked over my shoulder. Phoenix appeared to be just as surprised as I was. I put a finger to my lips before sliding inside. The first thing that hit me was the smell. The insides of the house reeked. I couldn't place the smell at first, but was certain I recognized the metallic scent of blood somewhere within. Walking down the familiar hallway, I could feel a lump in my throat. Something was wrong, and Phoenix followed close behind me until I came to a halt in the living room. The sofa, the TV, the small table and cabinet. They all looked the same at first glance. My heart almost stopped when I spotted the silhouettes of Dana and Michael on their couch in the darkness. From where we were standing, they had their backs turned to us. At first I thought they were asleep since neither of them did so much as move an inch upon our entrance. I slowly rounded the sofa, with their son doing the same. I'm not sure what he thought when he looked into the glazed, wide eyes of his dead parents. It was hard to tell. Then again, I myself was busy observing his reaction, more than experiencing one myself. I don't know why. In hindsight, it could have been the shock since at that moment, something clicked and nothing felt real anymore. It only began to sink in a lot later, that these were the two people who had taken me in as a child, who had raised and shown me so much affection, that I had truly believed they actually loved me. And now, they were sitting there, right in front of me, with their throats ripped out. Phoenix dropped to the ground, crossing his legs almost casually, like he wanted to get comfortable, regarding them while I still stood frozen in place. "Hey," he suddenly muttered, turning around in place and resting his palm on the floor where he was sitting. "There's stuff on here." I bent down to look. He was right. There were crude symbols drawn on the floor and what appeared to be chalk. Some looked like mere scribbles at best, but the biggest one, the one surrounding them all, was a large upturned star with a circle in it. In its very middle sat a tiny metal bowl. There was something lying in there, and when I picked it up, I found it to be a thin white velvet choker. "I've seen that thing before," Phoenix muttered, frowning thoughtfully. "I haven't. Was it Marlene's?" He rose to his feet, dragging his soul across the chalk markings. "I've seen this before, too. All of this. It was there when they tried to summon her into me, I'm sure of it. Oh well. Too bad this was a lost cause. Gonna be your turn now. I hope you know that. Did you ever think about how your entire purpose to them was to bring back my sister? Such a human waste." "Have you been here ever since? The house, I mean?" I asked, walking over to the cabinet. I opened the upper drawer. Phoenix was still busy inspecting the symbol on the floor. "Like, not just my room." "No, why?" He leaned the rifle against the side of the couch. "I just wanted to know whether you knew where Michael keeps his guns." He must have realized it the second I said it, but by the time he looked up at the handgun I was pointing at him, I had already pulled the trigger. When I said I'd never held a weapon like that before in my last recording, I meant long guns. The bullet went straight into his chest. When he dropped to his knees and then fell down, I put another one into his head. I didn't like it, but I had learned my lesson the last time he got up again. Of course, that didn't mean it was all over yet. At that point, I already had a vague idea of what had happened to Dana and Michael, Marlene, or whatever else had reached out to them from beyond, had killed them. It didn't seem to be around anymore, but I had to be sure. I grabbed some cleaning supplies from the kitchen pantry and went about wiping off the symbols. It took me some time, but when I was done, the floor was squeaky clean. I tried to get off some of the blood as well, which was arguably harder. I then grabbed the choker to examine it. There seemed to be nothing off about it at first glance, but knowing it had been used to summon this thing made me see it in a different light. It's white, looked a lot less innocent with that in the back of my head. I didn't have much to go off of, but I tried to piece together a theory from what I knew, and then a solution. I went through every single closet in the house, tore out all the pieces of female clothing I found, and carried them out into the backyard. The high bushes and fence thankfully obscured the heap of fabric I was building up. Then came the photo albums. One by one, I threw them into the pile. Everything and anything that could depict, have meaning to, or once possibly belonged to Marlene, it all went straight to the pile. Then I started dragging the bodies outside. First Dana, then Michael, and at last, Phoenix. I shut their eyes. They almost looked peaceful now. It stung a bit, knowing how much time they'd spent tormenting themselves and everyone around them, just to keep this dream alive, to bring back someone they loved. I placed them on the pile, hiding them underneath some of the clothing. I shoved the rifle and handgun in there as well. I proceeded to gather all the bottles of flammable liquids from around the house. Every single one, I emptied over the heap. Finally, after all was assembled and stacked up, I took Dana's lighter from inside the house and set the thing ablaze. It took me a few attempts, but soon, flames lit up and began licking at the heap of traces of Marlene. I'm on my way to the cabin right now, and just put in a small stop since I was getting dizzy and had to throw up. The stranger's car is still outside our former house, but I open the trunk, so as soon as the man and woman Phoenix put in there wake up, they'll be able to climb out and hopefully call for help. I know I should probably get my head looked at someday soon. It's more plausible that I might have sustained a concussion. First, I need to check back at Phoenix's place, though. I have to know if Marlene's old clothing, which she arrived in, is still there. I have to know if Marlene's old clothing, which she arrived in, is still around there somewhere. If it is, I'll burn it as well. I'll probably give Bill a proper burial too if I find the time. I can't just leave him in the freezer after all. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself afterwards. Maybe I should go to the cops, or wait for them to find me, in case that's ever going to happen. What will I tell them if they do? Maybe I can be truthful. Then they'd probably blame it on my head injury. Not that I'd care. Something beautiful is happening right now. As I sit and type, small flakes of hard, mannequin white skin are starting to fall from my face. A few minutes ago, I looked into the rearview mirror and peeled off an entire patch from my cheek. It was as big as my palm. I found soft, pink skin underneath. It's still fresh and vulnerable, but it's mine. My very own rosy, flexible, movable skin. I want to thank everyone who's encouraged me thus far. My name is Christine, and I have a face again.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.